Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HR Latte, your first cup of talent management whipped to perfection.
And there you have it, HR Latte. This is Rhianne Thorne, your host today and every day. This is my show, after all. I love it. Brought to you by Dovetail Software. Excited to remind everybody that hashtag Sherm Poetry is ongoing. Dovetail and Quantum Workplace and Broadbean were able to sponsor a really wonderful event at Sherm to benefit No Kid Hungry, to help raise awareness and raise some money to highlight what's going on over at No Kid Hungry, what they are doing to end childhood hunger and malnutrition of children. It's not just kids that are out there hungry, but kids that are out there not eating the right thing. So take a look at Sherm, hashtag Sherm Poetry. There are several slams, poetry slams that we performed that night that are available on YouTube or on Vimeo. Also, you can find them on LinkedIn, anywhere on the Dovetail fan page on Facebook. Please donate if you haven't already. I think we're getting close to about $4,000, and our goal is $7,500. I know we've got a big whopper of a donation coming in pretty quick from Dice, and an auction kicks off fairly quickly here. Hopefully today, I may hold it because I want to make sure folks that get paid on the 15th have an opportunity to participate in the auction. There's all this strategy that has to go on behind everything, as you know. And I am really excited about this, kicking off my new series, Healthcare HR Today, with my guest, Jay. Thank you, Jay, for letting me do that long intro, and thanks for joining me today.
I'm thrilled to be here. I appreciate you inviting me.
Well, you know this, but maybe not everybody knows this. I started off in recruiting, and I would say the HR space, working in healthcare executive recruitment. And so I have I worked for years in the dental field, so I have a very strong love for anything that has to do with healthcare, whether it's the information management tools that are there, the HR processes, recruiting, and given that I'm a mom, I've spent a lot of time in doctor's offices, so I kind of understand how the healthcare system works. And so to that end, I'm very excited to do this series. This is our pre-promotion for the ASHRA conference that's taking place September 19th through the 22nd, 18th through the 22nd, something along those lines. So you can check it out at ASHRA.org. But Jay, thank you so much for being here. As we kick off this series, I would love for you to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about the work that you are doing. You've been in the role now for 6 or 7 months, VP of Operations and Healthcare Strategy at Kinetics, leaving All Children's Hospital as an HR professional, a practitioner in the field. So we want to talk about what that's like to go from being a practitioner in the field and transitioning to what many of us call the dark side, even though you're still conducting HR practices and teaching processes and mentoring and all the great things that you get to do at Kinetics. So tell us about yourself and Kinetics, what they do.
Sure, I'd be happy to. So my life prior to joining Kinetics in January was 20 years of hospital HR, the last 14 of those years in HR executive roles. Had the opportunity to work in both for-profit and not-for-profit environments in the hospital industry. And the last 6 or 7 years, we're at a freestanding children's hospital that was part of the Johns Hopkins system based in Tampa Bay, Florida, and did a lot of fun things in the social digital space, trying to become a very contemporary employer from a recruitment marketing content distribution standpoint.
Yeah, you were somewhat of a maverick when it came to healthcare HR. You were doing things that other people didn't think they could do. I don't think you were asking permission. I think you were just doing it and then showing, look, this is why I'm doing it. There's a great result here. So that's
I'm
how
not
you
a
and
big
I met.
Permission guy.
Social media.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, okay.
Definitely not a big permission guy. And I'm not much into forgiveness either. I'm just kind of, let's go. Let's just not worry about either
that's
one of those. Let's
work.
Just make it happen. And that's right. We connected through social and one of the things that I found in that the pre-kinetics life was that the healthcare industry, or at least the hospital sector of the healthcare industry, is a combination of risk-averse, conservative generally, and very traditional in their corporate culture. And so I was, to use your term, a bit of a maverick, doing things like blogging and podcasting and requiring that the team use Twitter, not asking them, requiring them, and eliminating a lot of the paper and traditional print pubs that folks used. And it was wildly successful because that's how the world works nowadays. But unfortunately, a lot of hospitals aren't there yet. And so in the fall, I was excited about kind of moving up to a different hospital environment, because I was very clear that my next 20 years were going to be very similar to the last 20 years, and I would just keep progressing into larger and larger and more complex environments. And I was thrown off guard and blessed when the owner of Kinetics, Shannon Russo, reached out and we started talking about coming here. And now my role is I'm still very, very much 100% actually in the hospital business, but I'm working at Kinetics, yes, which is a recruitment process outsourcing firm based in Atlanta, but we have clients all over the U.S. And one of the things that Kinetics has gotten into is the healthcare industry. And so I lead our healthcare practice, and we're working with, we have a number of clients in the queue, and we have one very large client in Texas, so I'm on the road a lot with them, and that's a very, very busy place. We're filling about 350 requisitions per month for them.
Wow!
So our healthcare team is, our healthcare team here is really cranking, and it's just been really, really exciting because Kinetics is all about being a very contemporary, almost edgy type of employer. We have a great vibe here, and we are strong believers in the power of stories and content and recruitment marketing, and then leveraging social and email marketing as our distribution channels. And so we've gotten into some very interesting projects with this client out in Houston, and we've just been wildly successful in a fairly short period of time. So we're really excited about the growth there and what our healthcare practice is evolving into.
So you've been able to focus the expertise that you have built over the years to turn it around, package it, deliver it to another healthcare employer that can benefit from that knowledge, from those processes that you have learned and put in place and built over the years. And you mentioned this large client in Texas, 300 recs a month. To give listeners who are in healthcare, and maybe those outside of healthcare, the size of an organization. How many beds is that hospital? Is it a system? Is it a hospital system?
Yeah, it's a system they have, but it's a subspecialty hospital. So they have a large main campus. They have a second hospital that they've already built that they're expanding. And they have a third hospital that they are building right now. They're also adding a 19-story tower on one of their existing buildings. And so they're pushing 5,000
growing
new hires over the next few years. So one of the advantages of working for an organization like Kinetics is that we can scale very rapidly.
Right.
Whereas to support that growth, where traditional shops can't just keep adding FTEs in the recruitment function, we're also able to leverage the expertise.
To outsource.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so total bed count for that organization, do you have that?
A little over 600.
Trying to get an idea of this.
Okay. Yeah, so they're about 600 now, and they're going to add a third hospital. The third hospital is a community hospital. They'll have about 650 employees there, so 100 plus beds.
Okay.
So I mean, they're a big player for sure.
Wow, that's awesome, and I love to hear all of the growth that's happening in healthcare when there is so much negativity in the news about what's going on in healthcare, whether it's veteran facilities or with the ACA problematic issues that seem to continue to crop up and plague healthcare today. So I love hearing about growth and positivity that's happening. As you have expanded outside of your own personal practice when you were at All Children's and your past history as a healthcare HR professional, have you discovered anything new that maybe you didn't experience in your own practice? Is there something else that's happening out there that you weren't aware of because you had the finger on your own facility, on your own department, on your own, you know, all of the your own hires and employees within your own organization? Is there something new out there?
That's a great question. I think one of the challenges that I was frustrated with as I was trying to literally learn how a social and digital world could be applied to healthcare, I searched high and low to find other practitioners who were testing the waters, and particularly other HR executives who were testing the waters in the healthcare space. And it was difficult to find those folks. And it's not because they're not interested in it or motivated to try it, but the corporate cultures are pretty limiting in terms of giving people freedom to do that. And so as I've shifted out of that environment and come to Kinetics and where I'm able to your point, not just narrowly focus on my own organization, but I can work with a number of organizations, it's that frustration is being validated over and over again when organizations reach out to us and say, hey, we need to do something differently.
Yeah.
Because we get a lot of applications, but they're not the right type of applications. You know, there's a staggering number of people applying for jobs.
Okay.
That doesn't mean they have the skill set. That doesn't mean that they have the training or the license or the experience necessary.
Right.
That's this, you know, the whole notion of,
That's so frustrating to hear because that is a continual problem across the board in recruiting and hiring, right? The mm-hmm. unqualified mm-hmm. applicant. And then the job seeker that is out there that complains because they aren't treated well. And a lot of times they don't understand that it's part of, or not that they're not treated well, but that they don't have the best candidate experience. Nobody follows up with them. But they aren't taking their own responsibility in this, in that they're not applying for jobs to which they're fully qualified, right? And that seems
right.
to be the biggest plague that's issued upon hiring today across the board, not just in healthcare, but I can imagine in healthcare when there are specific requirements, specific licenses and certifications that are required for particular roles, that could become a real issue, and sorting through all of those applicants can be tedious at best, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, when you have, for example, this client we're working with, and you have several hundred thousand applications a year, that's a
Whoa.
Staggering number. And so we're looking at, we've launched a major initiative, just to your point about candidates, and I wanted to touch on candidate experience today because it's a term that gets used all the time. But many have trouble operationalizing. This organization's heavily investing in a new applicant tracking system solution. And so as we have been building out the governance structure and the project teams, one of the things that I've been able to bring to the discussion is not from healthcare, but it's from an opportunity I had last fall as part of IBM's initiative to kick off their new email solution called Verse. 30 of us were invited to New York City for 3 days to do this deep dive into not only promoting the launch of their product, but also getting a real sense of future of work, and was a big focus of that event, and also IBM's new way of thinking from a design perspective. So I'll just give a quick example of that. We went to their offices in Manhattan and discovered that in the old world of IBM, they would come up with an idea and they would tell their engineers to build and expand that idea without the end user in mind. So now start thinking candidate experience for a second. So IBM hires a bunch of designers. They design the end user experience. They give that intel to the engineers and say, you have to make the system work based on this design experience. So as we've been launching this project team, we're building this design thinking and candidate experience thinking into the process. So on the front end, so it's not just here are the technical specifications, and if everybody clicks the boxes and the drop downs just the right way, it'll be perfect, because that's not how the world works in reality.
No.
We're trying to bake in this whole candidate experience from a design perspective, and then let the technical experts and programmers and analysts bake that in. So that's kind of a stretch outside the industry to find some progressive thinking and bring it back into healthcare. Because on the clinical side of healthcare, there's nobody more advanced, right? But on the business side of healthcare, it's behind the curve.
That's really interesting when you think about that. And so that leads me right into my next question. There are a lot of phrases that are thrown around in healthcare IT today and what's happening with reporting, medical reporting and recording. We've got interoperability, which allows hospitals and healthcare organizations to work together to follow a treatment plan through the life of the patient, kind of like when you think of case management for the employee or case management for an issue with when you think of it with let's go even bigger to a factory where they're managing the building of one particular part or piece of equipment, right? And they follow that piece of equipment all the way through the factory. So the same thing can happen with an employee now through healthcare or through HR, right? We can follow the life of the employee. Well, we've always had case management in HR, but for some reason, there hasn't been this interoperability, I say with air quotes, right? And also the new issue, and I don't know if I don't know how connected HR is with interoperability and ICD-10, which is the universal coding system that needs to be put in place by October 1st of this year. So this
is
a big stretch. It's been delayed year after year after year. Well, this year, there's no delay yet, and October 1st is looming. So we've got the ICD-10, we've got interoperability hanging as this big cloud in the air. Do you see that this has any impact with what's happening with healthcare HR, the HR departments within organizations and hospitals?
Well, I think it speaks to how prepared are we in terms of our talent acquisition message, how prepared are we as organizations in the healthcare space to say, here's our workforce staffing plan, these are what our needs are, because I've been involved in all those hysterical, and I won't use air quotes, discussions about ICD-10 coming over the last few years. The default was, well, we just need to hire an agency and spend a huge amount of money because they've trained up their people. So that's just a reactive throw money at the problem type of solution instead of what I would consider the hard work and the real, and this is where the leadership piece separates from the management piece. The manager writes a check to hire a firm that can handle the ICD-10. The leader starts doing the difficult workforce planning, identifying what the competencies are, identifying what the skill set needs are, pick the topic, ICD-10 or otherwise, and
it could be anything that's new.
Decisions, making the decisions to get their own staff ready. There is a big disconnect between, well, we can just automatically hire somebody to do it. Well, that's not necessarily true all the time. Sometimes you have to develop your own people. Sometimes it makes perfect sense to outsource things. Sometimes it makes no sense to outsource things. And just assuming that another company can handle, for example, all of your coding, that may or may not be true. But to me, it's a bit of a cop-out. So as the world gets more complex, and we all know the healthcare industry, particularly the hospital sector of healthcare, is incredibly complex. It's difficult to navigate as a patient, let alone as an employee, let alone getting in the door because it's so difficult to get a job because the sheer volume of applicants, as we touched on earlier. It's hard for leaders to say, wait a minute, this is not working. We're going to have to make some hard decisions. But the higher up people go on the food chain, the more it is a survival strategy, the more it is a political play to protect their own career versus saying, why can't we just ask some hard questions? Doesn't mean I'm calling anybody out, but we need to ask ourselves some hard questions so we can get to a good answer. But if we're only focused on survival, we're never going to make any real impact. We're just going to plod along and try to protect ourselves. And that's
right.
The kind of stuff drives me nuts.
And isn't that true for any department, any type of, I work for a software company, right? And I think about our product roadmap and looking ahead. And if we don't stick to that roadmap and build into that roadmap improvements and updates, right? What ends up happening is all you do is end up fixing as you go down the road, right? You stop and fix a flat tire, you stop and fix a broken fence, you know, all these things instead of saying, okay, we have a roadmap, it's clear, we've already, you know, fixed the small things, let's move ahead and improve the process down the road. And if you're constantly focused on fixing those small things, you cannot get ahead. You cannot be the premier provider, which needs to happen for these healthcare organizations, especially when you have these deadlines like ICD-10 looming. You know, when I was doing healthcare recruitment, it was always about Joint Commission, you know, popping up and showing up. And now there's so much more than just that right now that's happening to healthcare today. And in particular to the staff, the employees, the new hires, all these things that impact greatly what's happening in the HR departments for healthcare. Thank you for giving us that little bit of inside information, what you're seeing. Is that what seems to be the most pressing issue when it comes to healthcare HR today, or is there something else you're seeing?
Yeah, you know, so I'm just going to supplement those comments with one quick thing, and that is one of the things that I found in my previous organizations and I'm finding with clients today wearing a little different hat is that there is a lot of thoughtful work from the operations side of the house that goes into planning for expansion or new growth. So they might say, we've done all the analysis on the capital spend, we've done all the analysis on the number of people we're going to need and the types of roles we're going to need, and then they hand the human resources team a quote-unquote timeline or project plan that says, here's all the people we're going to need and here's when we're going to need them by. The problem is they haven't engaged the people who have to source them and find them so that they can meet these project timelines. So they're not really timelines. They're just a bunch of dates on a piece of paper with a list of positions underneath. The real next step for healthcare HR is going to bringing data to the table, which is essential, and having a very robust reporting infrastructure is to say, look, our average time to fill for that job is 52 days. You just gave me a timeline that has all of these positions starting in 46 days. So where are we going to do that? And so so the questioning part becomes essential to help validate that HR's integration into that project planning piece. And so you say, okay, we missed our time to fill already. We have a six-day delta, if we use that example.
Right.
The other piece that a lot of leaders don't think about on the operations side is if we're going to hire, let's say, 10 new directors in a certain month as part of a project expansion, well, if the submittals or the number of interviews that need to be done per hire, maybe we're going to have four candidates for each one of those positions. And we're going to hire 10. That means we need to do 40 interviews. Have we thought about the need to do 40 interviews to get our 10 finalists or to get to our operating date? So I am, in fact, this morning I was working on it. There are two very large expansion projects, and the strategic planning that I'm doing right now is only questions of the operations people. Because in order for my team, which is a team of about 30 full-time dedicated recruiters on this one account and growing, they need to be able to articulate very specifically what the role is going to be. And I don't have the answers yet because I have project timelines, which are great, and the level of specificity is great, but I have to take it even deeper. And so that level of engagement from an HR leadership perspective, out to the healthcare ops leaders is going to really reinforce that partnership, because they're going to see the value in those questions. They're not challenging them. It's just collaborating with them on them.
Right.
But that,
well, and
that
it may
questions
be a surprise
first,
to them, right?
Strategy second. Yeah, they will be.
Yeah.
They will be. And
they'll
be
surprised.
Helpful. It's meant to be valued.
You know what's interesting in listening to you, this really crazy notion that in all relationships, business or personal, communication is key. Communication is key. And
essential.
If there is not an understanding, if there isn't a full understanding of what's being said and what's being heard, there communication isn't happening, right? So I love what you guys are doing at Kinetics, and I appreciate so much how you're able to get in and see with a third point of view, you know, a third person perspective, and dive in deep, not this 30,000 foot view, but dive in deep and close and see and say, I'm going to put it in your face. This is what's going on. This is what you're missing. This is what you need to do, and providing the help that's necessary. You talked earlier about candidate experience, and I want to go a little bit off the path of where we are right now, just briefly, because I think it
sure
talks to where we need to go now. If we spend so much time on understanding and strategizing the right hiring process, is it happening that there is an understanding that we need to now that we've spent all this time strategizing and hiring the right people, getting the right people in place, are we thinking about how to hang on to those people? Are we recognizing that other healthcare organizations may be doing the same strategic thinking that we are, and maybe trying to steal, you know, poach our great quality candidates that we spent so much time, placements that we spent so much time getting in place? Are we thinking about retention? Are we thinking about employee engagement? Are we thinking about how to hang on to the staff that we've spent so much time and energy and money to develop and grow?
Yeah, that's a really, really big issue. You asked about what are some of the new or evolving
pressing issues,
challenges in healthcare. Yeah, so that whole notion that you're talking about is right up there. I'll also talk about the baby boomers and retirements in a second as a huge threat from a staffing and competitive issue in the talent space. But yeah, so the retention piece, this is an interesting challenge for HR pros, right? Because we do our best to find the best pool of candidates. We screen them as best we can. We present good candidates to the hiring manager. They pick one. And then it's really up to the hiring manager to do their job and make it a good experience. So one of the things that I did in my last role was I had the role of employee ombudsman that I introduced, which was a great resource for the employees, wildly successful move. But I had her following up with every single new hire about 45 to 60 days after they started. Not because I didn't trust that the managers were treating them well, but I wanted to know if the managers were treating them
well. Yeah, right.
Because
exactly.
That flight risk in that first year, if you really turn people off to your organization, why would they invest a lot of emotional energy in powering through and seeing the big picture if they've had a terrible start? They can walk across the street and get another job. I mean, if you're a licensed professional in the healthcare space and you're a decent human being, you're employable. That's just how that works today.
Right.
Supply and demand is very simple. So one of the things that I would push back all the time is when I was challenged about turnover, I would say, well, I don't manage that department. If you want me to manage that department, I'll have a lot to say about the turnover. And I didn't say it in a flip, like snarky way, but it was really to clarify, I almost think that the role that HR plays in retention is providing support to the managers, not
well,
so
that's
much
exactly
to the
right
employees once they start. So how can I help that manager not be overwhelmed? How can I help them engage with their new hires in a way when they're too busy and
well,
they
see
have
what's
patients
happening.
They're upset and docs? And,
right.
Yeah. Right.
Sometimes
so
they can't even see what's happening right in front of them, right, because they're so involved in the day-to-day operations of their department, their particular department within
very
the hospital
deep
or healthcare organization, that they miss
yeah,
what's happening on in the individual front.
And new hires typically, whether it's you or me or anybody else, you typically don't want to make a lot of waves in a new company because you're trying
right.
to fit in, you want to make new friends, you want to feel like you're part of the team. So, and that's enough pressure when you're in a leadership role. If you're in a frontline staff person role, you're probably not going to say a whole lot. So we have to proactively engage them, but it's really helping the managers know it's okay. It's okay if they've had a bad experience. It's what you do about it that's going to carry the day.
Right.
It's not about ignoring it and hoping that it gets better. So I think that leadership support is essential, even if you're not in a growth mode. Compound that situation if you need to hire several hundred new leaders over the next couple of years because you're growing so fast. Now how do you get them ready to lead, let alone support new hires when they've or new people when they've never maybe even managed before? So that focus on leadership support, I think, is essential.
So to that end, our healthcare organizations and hospitals, have they made that shift to think about leadership development and succession planning? Or is there still the thought that if somebody from within can't lead because of how tight-knit the department is and there may be infighting, you know, if somebody from within is promoted, has there been that shift in thinking that we need to start thinking about personal growth for the individual employee and set them on a path for succession?
So that's a really good question. So I've seen that all over the board. I've seen precious few resources allocated to that sort of thing. Lots of words being used. So the phrase
yeah.
leadership development gets used all the time. The phrase succession planning gets done all the time. I have
yeah.
not seen in any of the hospitals I've worked in or in others that I've just been exposed to over the years where there is a, I'll say, deep level of succession planning. A lot of times it's at the tippy top of the food chain. Who's ready to be the next VP? If VP number one leaves, do we have somebody waiting in the wings? But it's hard to push that down really, really deep into an organization. And so conversely, I've seen other shops that have invested heavily in their organizational development function in a meaningful, thoughtful way and have leadership development programs and accelerated programs for leaders, talent management systems in place that are validated, that are, I'll say, scientifically based, led by very experienced leaders. I've seen that. I'm seeing it today with this client I'm working with. Very, very rich number of resources put into that to help them grow. But here's the rub. In the old days, when I first started, because I'm really old, we would call it the training and development department.
Right.
When budgets got tight, training and development budget got hacked, right?
That's
and
right.
So, because you really can't hack on the clinical side. So you have to outside of those areas. So training and development always got whacked. It has a trendier name now with OD, just like personnel is mostly gone and HR
yeah.
is the new trendy term, at least for now. So, that for me is the conundrum that many organizations face. They want great leaders. Everybody wants a great fit. Everybody wants a great culture and lots of experience, but they never want to grow their own or support anybody once they come on board. So you can't have both of those. And so it's
a precious few
that have invested.
I liken it to, I mean, if we go to this sports analogy, which I am wont to do, you know, and you'll appreciate this as a hockey connoisseur, the offense versus the defense. You know, we can't afford to cut our defense or reduce our defense, the manliness, the vigor of our defense. So we'll cut back our offense, which is the part that helps us score. You know, that's the part that
mm-hmm.
gets us ahead, right? But because we spend so much time shielding and blocking shots, we can't get in there and really score. And that's what leadership development is. That is what succession planning is. It's building up for the future so that you can continue to grow and continue to bring in the necessary dollars that come from patients and insurance companies and any other type of investment where healthcare organizations rely on dollars and the baseline that helps them grow for the future. You can't continue to own
right
expensive move, right?
Yeah, you're spot on. And so when you think about the pressure to deliver now, what does month end look like? What does the quarter look like? In a for-profit environment, what's our stock price looking like? What's our valuation look like? That is, it becomes a difficult sell to say, you know what, we need to pick our top 15 leaders and put them through a robust, true development program, heavily in them, because in the next 3 to 5 years, because of our workforce planning process, we know 6 of our executives are going to retire, and we know that we're going to need a pool of people to draw from so that we can maintain our culture and our values, and we can send a message to our employee population that when you are loyal, when you work hard, and you, we will recognize you, and there is a path to literally go all the way to the top. That's a powerful culture, but it requires an investment that has nothing to do with returns now.
That's right.
A philosophical investment.
Long-term strategy, right. And
everybody talks about it.
Well, it's hard to
it,
invest in philosophy,
executes.
Right?
Sure is. It sure is.
So when we consider that all the changes that have taken place in healthcare over the last 15 years, I remember when we first started talking about going truly paperless, right? And my various visits with aging parents to the hospital and with younger children, taking them to the hospital or to medical offices, you can see that transition, right, where they've gone from paper charts to, and the front offices have streamlined, everybody carries an iPad or some type of mobile device, right, where they are recording information. Have the HR departments kept up with that, with the medical records side of things? Have they gone paperless, or are they still struggling under the weight of paper?
Okay, so I had to mute my phone while I was hysterically laughing during that question. just kidding. No, HR departments are not paperless. No. So here's the challenge. That is somewhat of an iterative process, and we're getting there. So I think there's a difference between the human resources information system and doing data entry on requisitions or transfer forms into a big giant database that theoretically is supposed to help you generate meaningful reports. But what is often the first domino that's pushed in that workflow is a form.
Okay.
And so the form is completed. We're getting better at those forms being digital forms. But there's an awful lot of paper in human resources, and there are huge amounts of employee records that are paper. And so, you know, do you invest the money to, I'm going to use crude terms, scan and file electronically, you know, 20, 30, 40 years worth of records so that everything is, can truly be electronic? Or do those resources get allocated elsewhere in the organization? So, yes, there's progress being made, but there's an awful lot of paper. I mean, it's just in my last job, we had a great system, but there was lots of paper, lots and lots of paper.
That just seems so strange to me. When I work in HR technology, right, and to know how much is cloud-based and web-based and, you know, the SaaS systems that are out there, that it's still heavy for these departments. They're still paper heavy. So it'll be interesting to see what goes on over the next, you know, 2 to 5 years. What do we see happening within HR? Will it start to fully impact all HR departments? Will the seepage of paperless when we're talking specific health care, right? When we're talking about the care of patients, will that start to seep into the HR department for healthcare organizations and hospitals? We talked earlier about the disconnect, the miscommunication that's going on between leadership at hospitals and healthcare orgs and the HR departments or the hiring team. Is there any other area where you see a disconnect or miscommunication taking place? Is it strictly in hiring and growth, leadership, dev, or are you still seeing, is there another area where we're seeing that disconnect or miscommunication?
Well, I think that the connection between leadership and the team, meaning the whole team, not just their direct reports, is really, really important, because who are we going to draw to our hospitals or healthcare companies to work, right? So there's that generationally, we're going to be seeing, finally, after years of predicting it, it's happening with baby boomers starting to retire in droves. And
right.
Now that the economy is a bit stronger, people actually can.
Feel like they can,
so,
right?
So when you have those people leaving the organization, you are not just losing someone who is, for example, a registered nurse. You're losing a registered nurse who has many, many years of experience, is very gifted clinically, has probably been precepting or training new nurses for 15 or 20 years or more.
Right.
And they're gone. So there's a vacuum that's starting to be created from a talent perspective of who is in the organization. Many of those folks, if they're not in leadership, they're informal leaders who are very influential. So there's a big gap there. When you layer on top of that, in terms of your question relative to disconnect, senior leaders that are simply not visible, or they're only visible when there's a crisis, which is the most transparent reaction of all time, you start to wonder, is the leadership group truly tuned into what's happening with the workforce in general? And I started getting nervous about this in my own leadership practice about a year and a half ago. And so I was trying to figure out, how do I get more connected without it being kind of a sham? And so I decided to schedule an hour a month time on all these different clinical units, where I was paired up with a clinical person, but I didn't want the manager anywhere around. I didn't want a presentation. And I certainly didn't bring one. Good God, leadership has plenty of PowerPoint decks. We don't need that anymore. And so I would spend time with these folks, and they would be a little skeptical at first, and I was simply wanting to learn. And I would explain, hey, I have a job where I'm in a lot of meetings all day, and I have different priorities, but the real work is what you do. And so as they got comfortable with that, suddenly they had the power, because they were teaching me. And I would ask a lot of questions, and I would validate everything and tell them they were great. And then I could send little notes afterwards to kind of recognize how great they are. And I'd watch them with patience and the whole bit. And that was a way for me to demonstrate, because I knew they'd be chatting about it. They'd probably be a little nervous that the VP of HR was going to be shadowing them for an hour or so. But when it was turned out to be a positive experience, I could get some traction from that, from a morale standpoint, that I wasn't just some guy, you know, the traditional classic empty suit that was just in a conference room all day. And that was a way, even though it's a tiny little example, I felt like I was shifting the dialogue a little bit and getting a little bit more in touch. And oddly enough, when a lot of my colleagues weren't doing that, I could comment on things that they didn't even know. And I'm the HR guy, right?
Yeah.
So it was very interesting, but it all came down to, you know, I have this vision of the, you know, the open door policy, and my view is for leaders to get off their, you know what, and walk out the door. The open door policy is not for people to feel so blessed that they can come in and see the almighty ruler who's decided to open their door for an hour every Thursday afternoon. I think open door policy is 100% about walking out, not anybody walking in.
That's right.
And so
your door
kind of shifts. Yeah, your door's open, so you can go get out of there. Now we could be in our office 24 hours a day.
One of the things that I like most about talking with you about the, and this is your second appearance on HR Latte. I had you on another show that I was when I was with Techno Media, Talent Talk. And I love talking with you because you are so passionate about HR, about hiring, about the role that HR plays, the true business role that HR plays for any organization, whether it's healthcare or not. Can an HR professional be really successful and not be passionate about their work, about the people they serve?
See, you threw me a trick question, Rayanne.
I did.
So my answer is, through my lens, No, they cannot be when we define success the way I define it. Success
so how
for
do you
me
define
is you are, yeah, you're visible, you're bringing new ideas, you're taking risks, you're pushing back, you're challenging the status quo, you are going out on a limb and you know you're going alone, and that's okay. Doesn't mean it's not scary, but it's okay. When I started really teaching myself about social and social tools and strategies, I was alone. And I would say to the organization,
right,
this is
right,
going to be great. This is excellent. And I had no idea if any of this stuff would work. Well, turns out that it did, fortunately, and I learned a lot of what I should and shouldn't do. But if you don't have, for me, in my opinion, if you don't have that drive to keep pushing, if you're not trying to make a difference, then you're simply a glorified clerk. You're doing transactional work, and maybe that organization just wants you to make sure that the compliance stuff's done and we pass joint commission. Okay, well, that's fine. To me, that's not leading HR. That's
right,
processing paperwork and forms. And some folks, that's a perfect place for them to be, and that's great because that work needs to get done. But if we're talking about leaders making a difference, they need to find the right people to be on their team to make sure that gets done, but they shouldn't be doing that. They should be
pushing
much harder.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, that passion shines through. And quick sidetrack here on social media. Is healthcare catching up? Is HR catching up? Or are you still having to push that cart up the hill?
Oh, I'm like climbing Mount Everest with no oxygen. It's a steep climb. The flip side of that is, not that I know about all healthcare organizations, but there's just, for those of us that are pretty heavy into the social media space and healthcare space, there aren't a lot of people that we're running into there.
Right.
And you know, it's because you're, you know, power user of social tools also. We start running into people in social. That's how you and I connected, right? You just start finding people who have these passions, and there just isn't that community out there in the healthcare HR space. I've been using the healthcare HR hashtag for literally years, and it's not a lot happening there. So the flip side of that is there's a huge opportunity.
There's
when we
not.
Talk about what I've done, and one of the nice things about transitioning to Kinetics is that I can, when I'm talking to clients, I can talk about things I've done, not what I've read we should do, or I saw a video clip on YouTube of what you should do. These are things I've done as a practitioner and am still helping to execute in my new role. So there's a high degree of credibility there, and there's a huge amount of interest. People just don't know how to get started. They're so busy. There's so many demands on them, all valid. They just can't figure out how to do it. And so we try to, because we don't just do RPO here. We do consulting and search, and we help build career sites and make the organizations kind of catapult them into 2015 from an optics perspective. And so it's a way that I can help, which was one of the draws to coming here. I can still be in the healthcare space. The mission part is very important to me. But I can help a lot more than just one company, which is kind of a cool feeling too.
So when you consider all the social tools, the HR technology companies that are out there, the opportunities that there are to use HR technology, is there a more important tech than others that should be considered within a healthcare HR department?
Well, yeah.
So
I would.
Where should they go? What should they do?
Yeah. So I would say absolutely the first order of business is how do you present yourself to the world? If you have a static career site that has a screen, a white screen, and then a picture of someone who isn't one of your employees wearing scrubs with a big giant smile as the graphic, quote unquote.
Go on.
Then that's just right. You're laughing because you know, like every hospital looks like.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, they're just painful. They're painful and awful to look at.
The diversity scrubs, right? diversity in scrubs.
Right, right. Yeah, tremendous amount of that. And all ages, colors, roles, right? Business suit,
right.
The 62-year-old white male surgeon. So, like, all
right.
the stereotypical stuff
exactly.
gets loaded in there. And that is just not where the world is. It is just not even close to where the world is. We that's our number one priority. Like, the career site must be eliminated now. And the functionality has to be elevated. The content needs to be fresh 3 or 4 days a week. Video, Instagram campaigns. We very much believe in a two-screen world. There's a big, giant flat screen that somebody's looking at in the evening, and in their lap
yep.
is a phone or a tablet
yeah.
or a MacBook, right? So there's two
right.
screens going at all times. There's a Twitter hashtag in the bottom corner of every TV show. Well, it's there for a reason. So I want to be, when I was in All Children's, I wanted to be in all those channels, and that's clearly what we're trying to do with our clients now. So the number one thing is, how do you look to the world? If you look boring and stale and you have differentiated yourself, it doesn't matter if you're a power Twitter user, because nobody's going to care, because your organization,
you won't win.
If you're a power Twitter user and you have a very robust career site, you can leverage that all over the place, and now we're
right.
talking. But that's the number one place. How do you look to the world? Why does your employer brand, and I don't mean company brand, I mean employer brand, does that say anything about you? And so we push real hard on Facebook career pages, career site, all sorts of things related to the employment experience. And it was wildly successful in St. Pete. I mean, the HR Facebook page was huge. Yeah.
How many followers or how many likes did you have on your employment branding page?
Yeah,
that's insane.
We were pushing 20,000 on the HR page. Yeah, it was good for a 259-bed hospital.
And how many employees?
3,200
FTEs.
Is that
FTEs
or
just total employees? That's insane to me. So headcount, 3,200 and 20,000 likes or followers. To your social efforts. That's insane. So I knew this show would be one of my favorites because I first of all, I love this topic. And on top of that, I know how passionate you are about what you're doing. I hope Kinetics knows how lucky they are to have you in their stable, because I'm sure that the practice that you're building there is going to make a huge difference to them. To bring you in as a leader, a collaborator, somebody that can grow a particular department. They're very fortunate to have you, Jay. And I want to thank you so much for being here. Before we get to my favorite part of the show, let me quick hit save the list. Are there any last words of wisdom you have for healthcare HR today?
Yeah, stop being afraid of anything. There are no rules. Go for it. Yeah, we obviously know we're not going to break the law or break some sort of HIPAA rule. I don't even know why we even talk about those things anymore. That's just assumed. But go try
new
things.
Yeah, you
have to. Experiment. Go, go, go. Yes, absolutely.
Awesome. So go. You hear that, folks? Go, 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 go. And last but not least, my favorite part of the show, not really, but it is, because I get to learn new things for me. I asked these questions to you, I think, back in January when you were last on my show. Do you have a favorite new food in all of your new travels that you're doing with your new gig? Have you found a new restaurant, new food that you're enjoying now?
So that is a good question. I have actually become more hardcore, and my new thing with food is I don't even look at the menu and I order what I want.
Well, some places you can do that. California is key. You can do that anytime you're in California, but not
nobody's
every place
pushed
allows.
Back.
That's
nobody's
awesome.
Pushed back. So I'm a bit of a fitness fanatic. So I'm often ordering stuff that, doesn't have all like the cream sauce and all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
So it's a little bit fitness focused, but yeah, that's like my new thing. So I don't know that I have new foods, but the way
anymore.
I get my fuel is different.
Okay. Good. I just can't order like that anymore. I can't eat like that anymore. I don't know if it's because I've become more conscientious about what I, you know, ingest, or if it's aging, the aging process to my body can't handle all that heavy cream and lots of cheese and all of that good stuff. You know?
Yeah.
So
I know, I love it.
A little piece of cheese every now and then. I cheat a little bit there, but that's it. Your favorite book? Are you reading something new? Are you do you still have a favorite from the past? What's going on in
your continual learning? Yeah, so I read a ton of blog posts, tons and tons. Like, I don't even watch evening news or anything.
And
I
have
a Twitter list. Well, I don't know about that, but thank you for saying so. I think that the two books that are on my docket that I just haven't invested the time to read yet are Brian Wenpen put out a book called Note to Self, which I want to read. And
I have it on my shelf.
Brian Kramer has a book. His new one just came out, but his H2H, Human to Human book, I want to read as well. So I have two kind of on deck, but I haven't cracked the binders on them yet.
And the URL for your blog, No Excuse HR, is it noexcusehr.com?
It's No Excuses with an S, HR.com.
No Excuses. Yep. No Excuses, HR.com. And folks listening, you have to start reading his blog. It's about leadership. It's wonderful. I liken it. If you like Seth Godin, this is the kind of in-your-face punch messaging. It's incredible read. It's not heavy. It's not lengthy. So you can enjoy it quickly and take the message with you. I often repost and retweet what Jay writes because it is so just that quick impact that you need sometimes. So thanks, Jay, for continuing to write. I was worried that you wouldn't write anymore when you joined Kinetic. So I'm glad to see that that practice is continuing. Is there a Twitter handle also for that?
Yes. Well, not for No Excuses. I just channel everything through my Twitter, yeah.
So it's at J.R. Kuhns, K-U-H-N-S. At J.R. Kuhns,
right.
How you can follow Jay if you want to hear more. And he does often hashtag healthcare HR, and you can follow information there. Jay, favorite place? Is there a new place? I know you're spending a lot of time in Texas.
I'm spending a lot of time in Texas that I enjoy immensely, but my absolute favorite place is Tampa Bay, Florida, for sure.
Oh, do you get home often?
I do more and more. And more I travel, the more that becomes a priority to get there. So that's all coming together nicely. But hard to beat tropical beach and NHL hockey all in
that's
the same
true.
Community. That's just about as good as it gets for me.
So very true. And last but not least, your favorite thing to do. Your favorite thing to do.
Right now, because I'm pretty dialed into my fitness, I would say that working out is a wonderful thing. It helps me feel like I'm not as old as I am, and it's a wonderful way for me to process through the day and kind of manage stress and pressure. And I have a bit of a hectic travel life now, and that's just been phenomenal. And you get good results because you feel better. So there's kind of a secondary gain there. But, that's definitely what I'm getting a lot of. I'm enjoying that immensely.
Jay, thank you so much for joining me today, kicking off my new series, Healthcare HR Today. I knew you would be the perfect guest to kick off this series, so I really appreciate your time.
Oh, thanks for having me. I love connecting with you and appreciate the chance to check in with all your listeners, too. It's fabulous.
Great. Well, I appreciate everybody tuning in. Big thanks to Jay Kuhns and Kinetics for giving us the time today so that we can launch this series. I will be speaking with Josh Rock, a recruiter with Fairview Health, Blake Moser, medicalrecruiting.com, and Nancy Rubin, and a couple other guests that will be joining us. Nancy Rubin is a very well-known healthcare HR professional in Southern California, former president of the, I believe it's HASC, Hospital Association of Southern California, currently HR professional in Los Angeles at, I think it's Hollywood Hospital, but we'll be clearing that up later on this month. So please tune in as we continue this conversation about healthcare HR today, brought to you by Dovetail Software. Thanks, everyone. Have a great day.